And I truly believe that not having a plan B is a very specific and terrifying motivator. The plan B was, you know, we quit our jobs and we have to go find part-time jobs because this doesn't work. But I think when you're 25 years old, that naivete can really help you.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites, or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started. Carly Zeckin and Danielle Weisberg are the entrepreneurs behind The Skim. It's an incredibly successful media company. Danielle and Carly were fresh out of college when they identified a significant gap in the media landscape. There was a lack of media outlets specifically tailored to women. This was despite women making upwards of 90% of household financial decisions. There was minimal content that catered to their perspectives and their priorities. Join me today as Carly and Danielle take us through the creation of their revolutionary company, The Skim. I started off by asking them about growing up, where they grew up, and who and when were some of the influences in their life that made them the entrepreneurs they are today.
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for having us. I grew up in New York City. Family lore has it that like I was always nonstop asking questions about any information and had a very investigative journalistic side to me. I was obsessed with the Today Show and used to beg to stay home from school or be late for school because I wanted to watch the end of the segment and end of Katie Couric and all of that. And I definitely was born with a just natural inclination towards news and stories. And like, I really just remember that at such a young age. I think from an entrepreneurial perspective, I don't think at the time, I don't think I grew up thinking I grew up in an entrepreneurial house, but looking back, I'm like, oh my God, totally did. My mom started her own nonprofit events and fundraising business from home and taught me like how to network and taught me how to get into a room and taught me how to never be afraid to say no and always be proud of why you deserve to be listened to, and really taught me how to connect the dots of problem solving business and meeting the right people to help you get there. My dad also super entrepreneurial in real estate, and honestly, both of my grandmothers both started their own businesses. So
wow.
I didn't grow up like acknowledging that entrepreneurialism was around me. My little brother also, he's not little, he's 33.
He'll always be your little brother.
Yeah, he also is an entrepreneur. Was like the first one in my family that when I think of it that way. But he was always starting a business and printing out little business cards when he was like 6 years old. It was very much around me. It wasn't something that I aspired to do. I aspired to be in journalism.
And Carly, you were in New York. Danielle, you were growing up in Chicago. And what about you? Yeah. What was that like? And just to go back to what I had asked Carly, were there certain influences or things that happened to you early on that eventually the journalism thing and then, of course, becoming an entrepreneur?
Yeah. So I grew up in Chicago, downtown in the city. I think that Chicago is a really political city. It's hard to meet someone who doesn't have an opinion on how the city is being run. And my family, it was very involved in kind of local politics. And so I grew up always not even realizing, I think that I had a affinity for politics, but much more that I just took it as like, everyone talks about this, right? Everyone knows what's going on at like in their city in a way that I didn't realize was not the case, I think, until I got to college. And more than that, it was not only was I expected to be on top of what was going on, but also that my opinion on it was something that was looked at dinner table conversation. And I think that is something that I don't realize until I really graduated college was a key part in making me feel like not only do I have a voice, but that people are looking, there's an expectation that I use it. And I think the political part for me was, and the analytical part about politics was probably more what drew me, honestly. I was a really good writer, but, and I talk about this a lot in our podcast, I think I wasn't necessarily the most extroverted person when it came to asking questions. That took me a really long time. It wasn't until after I graduated college and I realized part of my job was to get paid to ask questions that I really grew into that. As far as entrepreneurship, it's a big theme in my family. My dad actually left college, started a clothing store, then went to go work at the Board of Trade and started his own seat there. And then after that, did a lot of entrepreneurial things. My mom stayed at home when my sister and I were little, and then she started her own real estate practice later. And I think from that, I got to see lots of, I think, the truth behind being an entrepreneur, the value of a good partnership and how much that is needed. Also, when things are good, they're really good. And when they're bad, they're really bad. And often they happen in the same day or the same week. So a front row view in a way that didn't seem to be, was not rose colored glasses. I think at the same time, what that did once I entered the workforce that I definitely didn't realize until a boss pointed it out to me, and not necessarily in the kindest way, but it was like, they told me basically that they didn't think that staying in journalism was going to be enough for me. And it took me a really long time to understand what that meant. Because I was like, do you not think I'm good enough? Is it that what's not up to speed? And I think it was really that I wanted to understand the broader parts of the business, or that I had a lot of ideas that didn't fit into the standard role of a journalist. And sometimes I think back and I'm like, wow, that person was actually pretty insightful. And from there, I think a lot of those themes definitely have carried through to our path today.
So tell me about, both of you really started out, and correct me if I'm wrong, but as journalists and really into journalism and sharing information. Is that how you both started? What was your first kind of like foray into it after school, and what were you doing? And Danielle, why don't you go? You can start.
Yeah, I will tell a story that I think is familiar to a lot of people, especially those who graduated and 2008, amidst one of the financial crises that we went to, right? I graduated, there were no jobs. I moved back home with my parents. I waitressed. I made more in the 4 months that I waitressed than I did in the next 2 years.
Believe it.
In journalism. I then got a call from a very big figure in journalism, this guy named Brady Daniels, who was running the DC Bureau for NBC News. And I had been applying to jobs in journalism left and right, wasn't getting anything. I got rejected from the PAGE program, which like still to this day is a sensitive subject. And he said, I think we basically have a role. It is a year-long program. There's no guarantee that you'll get a job at the end of the year. You work basically when we want you to work. You get paid $12 an hour. There's no health insurance. And can you be here in 2 weeks? And we're definitely not paying for any moving expenses. And I was like, sure. I flew myself, like packed up my stuff. I got a place off of Craigslist and started off in the DC Bureau, worked there for 2 years, got the best experience from some of the best journalists, and then moved to New York and worked for NBC there and Carly and I crisscrossed. And then after working for NBC and producing for them for a bit, we found ourselves roommates with an idea.
I like that. I want to get to that idea, but Carly, I want to hear your story.
Of course. I also graduated in 2008. And I think as Danielle's story shows, like when you want to work in news, you can't really look for a job really far in advance. So I went to the school where a lot of my friends went down the finance or consulting path, and they knew what they were doing by February or March of graduation year. And I was like, I can't even apply for jobs until I can start that Monday. So I applied for jobs about a week before Lehman Brothers collapsed. And so I got a job for a 10-week position that could probably roll into something longer, no guarantees, at CNBC, no health insurance, $12 an hour. And so I took that in New Jersey, and I lived it at home for the first part of it with my parents. And then my first day was the day that Lehman went under. So that was the foray into breaking news, financial crisis, and knowing. And I was also put on like a new show that was in development that didn't last very long, but that was supposed to be a prime time at CNBC, but got preempted every night because of the breaking news. So it was this kind of crash course and actually knowing what I didn't want to do. And I was like, I am not cut out for breaking news. I'm like, I don't like how physically I feel every day. And from it, my cortisol levels were not enjoying that environment. And so I really wanted to work on longer pieces, which I didn't know at the time was called longer form. And I got a job. I was able to move over to MSNBC's long form unit, which did specials and documentaries. I loved it. I worked with just amazing, wonderful people. And I really wanted to actually move to DC and leave the city. Danielle and I swapped lives for a bit. We overlapped in DC, but she went to New York. And I worked for actually production companies and documentaries that produced for NBC and MSNBC. So I went in the field for production work, came back to New York, needed a roommate, an apartment, or moved into an apartment with my friend Danielle. I was working at NBC News, and here we are.
Now, you both met, though, or you've crisscrossed like a ton until it sounds
a
like
lot.
You became
yeah.
roommates.
Yeah.
But
yes.
Originally, how did you meet? Was it Is it true?
Originally,
on
we
Tinder?
Met. It was Tinder. Yeah. No, it was
Sorry,
Match.
I had to
we
throw
both
that
had
in.
Very detailed. we both had very detailed bios. Must love news.
And it was the only match that
yes.
actually had that.
Yeah. We met in Italy, actually, on a study abroad program in college. So we like to say we have the best founding story. But we met in Rome over a love of fried artichokes. I highly recommend.
I like that. So now tell me, you move in together, and how does the idea for the Skim come about? Or was it the idea for the Skim, or was it something else?
It was like slowly and then all at once. I think, honestly, some people also listen to our story and they're like, oh, the takeaway should be that you find a roommate and you start a business together. And we are clear that is not what we advise. We think it's like insane that it's worked out. And it has. A lot of it was that we had very similar backgrounds, which is also something that's very different than when you look at most co-founders. But we did. And we were at the same point in life, meaning neither of us is in a position to have to take care of families. We weren't married, didn't have kids. We knew that it wasn't easy then, but it was like this knowledge that it wasn't going to get easier. We had about a couple $1,000s saved up between the two of us, and that was it. And I truly believe that not having a plan B is a very specific and terrifying motivator. The plan B was we quit our jobs and we have to go find part-time jobs because this doesn't work. But I think when you're 25 years old, that naivete can really help you. For a while, we had both the same frustrations and the same passion. The passion was we absolutely loved working at NBC News. I think we had fantastic experiences. I feel so lucky that I got to have the foundational training that I did. I think it is so important when you are becoming a journalist to get to learn from people who have so much more experience. And you really don't get that unless you have that opportunity to watch and observe. I also think that we were really hungry for more. And what that more meant, and going back to the theme, is that we love storytelling. We love working in journalism. But we also saw that there were audiences that were not thought of, that the primary demographic was one of basically 45 plus men. And we obviously are not that. And our friends didn't watch what we produced. There was no news source that they loved. We were itching to be able to not only create great and meaningful content, but also advise on the business side. And I think those things put together over time became this idea, and we called it Project TBD. And so that was the part that like took a long kind of slow burn on us talking about something, talking about it. But then when we actually set out to construct what that would look like or how we would do it, that part was really fast. We didn't have any resources. We had a friend that helped us put together a MailChimp template. Email was really the only thing that we could do. And it was the two of us. And how do you write it? And how do you make it sound something conversational? And that's what we did. I think that the biggest part was pushing ourselves to actually make that leap.
How hard was it, Carly, when you guys were starting to, you're obviously working, but you're putting out a newsletter, and anyone who knows who's been in journalism or news, to put that content together, it's a lot of time, effort. And were you, I assume, doing a daily out? Yeah. How difficult was that initially? Like, what were the hardest things and the biggest challenges you faced?
It's funny, as you say daily, I think of, I don't know, a scene from a sitcom when two friends go out and do something and we're like, whose idea was this? Whose genius idea was this? It's cold or I'm tired. And I just have such a distinct memory of us being like, why don't we ever come up with a daily product? We're so tired. And so I think you hit the nail on the head. And what were the kind of the challenges or like our environment, so to speak? Because Danielle said it was the two of us. We were roommates, which made kind of our OpEx low. It also made, you know, work, home work well before that was a thing. And we basically, when I look back at what our life was scheduling wise and just what our actual like life looked like, it is insane and truly something that I think you could have only done at that stage in our lives, which is at 26 years old. We ran the business, or I should say tried to build a business during the day. So that was the time that we, let's just say 9 to 5, we were taking meetings, we were networking, we were just trying to talk to anybody and everybody that would talk to us about this idea. And whether that was to like gain subscribers, gain an intro to an investor, didn't matter. We would also have like our quote unquote internal business meetings, which was again, the two of us, of what are upcoming things we should be covering and like, how do we want to handle like accounting? It's like hilarious to think about it because every meeting was the two of us, but they had different agendas. And then at 5:30, we would start our pitch meeting for the day. And then we would write like into the night. We would take a break for dinner or go see a friend or have a little bit of a social life. We were back at our computers at 10. We would run right onto the night. And then we would sleep in shifts to monitor updating news so that the newsletter would go out at 6 a.m. And remember, we're roommates. Just like when you're just doing the same thing over and over, you don't realize. And there's probably a better way to be able to do something. And we must have been like 9 months into this. And I remember like Danielle was like, maybe we both don't need to do every shift in the morning. Oh, you're right. So that we were able to take turns to get more sleep. We were literally both getting up to watch the other edit. Like it was the stupidest thing. But yeah, it was an insane schedule that we could, it was just like for a moment in time, and we were running on adrenaline. And in the background of all of this is the Skim took off. Like it was a movement and we had thousands upon thousands, mostly women, that were like, where have you been all my life? And so that kept us going. And that really was the engine underneath what we built.
more from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Are you looking to put your products in front of millions of customers? Then Walmart Marketplace is the platform for you. They get 120 million unique monthly visitors to walmart.com, according to Comscore. That's 120 million unique monthly visitors. Walmart Marketplace is easily one of the fastest growing and largest e-commerce platforms in the world. And right now, they're running a limited time promotional offer for all new sellers. If you join today, you can save up to 50% off referral and fulfillment fees. Conditions apply. Unlock the scale of one of the world's largest retailers and gain instant access to millions of customers on marketplace.walmart.com/success. That's marketplace.walmart.com/success. Head over and get started today.
And our next sponsor.
Looking for a rewarding, life-changing opportunity that enhances the lives of children in your community? With almost 50 years of experience, Huntington Learning Center is the nation's leading K-12 tutoring and test prep franchise, dedicated to shaping brighter futures for our students and franchisees. Huntington is the top revenue-producing supplemental education franchise in the U.S., and our proven system is the key to success for you and your students. The Huntington Advantage includes low startup costs, turnkey systems, dedicated support teams, national and local marketing support, and multiple revenue streams to help you build a life-enriching and profitable business. No education experience is needed. In today's environment, the need for tutoring has never been greater. When you become part of Huntington Learning Center, you're filling an urgent need in the growing $5 billion supplemental education industry. To learn more, visit huntingtonfranchise.com. Make a meaningful difference, pursue your dreams of business ownership, and be a positive force in your community. Don't wait. Visit huntingtonfranchise.com today.
And we're back.
I do want to ask you both, first off, it's shocking that you didn't kill each other from living together, working together,
like
in the same apartment. I can just only imagine that. But I want to ask you, when was it that it took off? Because obviously I wasn't your demographic then, now, but I do remember at the time, like all of my female friends who probably fit that demo were talking about this incredible newsletter that they were getting and information. What was it? When was it that it took off and how did it take off?
Well, I think that's the craziest part of the whole story is we had no money for marketing. We had no money for paid acquisition. So what we did was just start telling everyone that we knew about it. We sent out a mass email to like anyone that we had on our like email address book, or at the time you could get emails through Facebook. So all of that, and said, hey, we quit our jobs. We started this. Please sign up. We also reached out to a lot of talent and press that we didn't necessarily know or work for, honestly, but they were really, there were some really lovely people, Hoda Kotb being the biggest one, who took the time to listen to what we were doing and to just lend some support. And that was amazing. And then from there, it gave us a base that was really nationwide, which was something that was really important to us, was to not be coastal. And so we took that and we started to run with it. And what that meant is we would do like a college tour where it involved Carly driving, which was not good, but I was a worse driver. So that was, and she would drive and we would not really be able to park. And I would jump out and put flyers under people's doors or like sneak into the cafeteria. It also meant like when we would go anywhere in New York, we would stop in a Starbucks or get chased out of an Equinox and leave flyers. We sent t-shirts anytime someone tweeted something, and at the time it was still a tweet, something positive about us. If it was like an influencer or talent, we would ask our friends who lived across the country to wear t-shirts whenever they were out and walking. And from there, we started to see really a conversation strike up between, we were reaching out to people, they were reading, getting hooked, and then emailing us back. And the craziest thing is that we would respond. And that became a really deep and connected relationship. And it laid the groundwork for the zero and first party data that really has become what the company has become known for, in understanding and building products that fit in with making it easier to live smarter for women across the country. We also tried to do, we did do actually a 30,000 person brand ambassador program. And that started with that unique kind of pen pal relationship of having people that wanted to be part of this, of wanting to build something from the ground up. And it became, as Carly said, like a movement. And I think a movement of confidence, of connecting with entrepreneurism and connecting with the world around you and connecting with the feeling of my opinion, my vote, my voice matters.
What was it about the content that really resonated with your audience?
We sounded the way our audience spoke. I remember we had somebody once write in, I hope I still have this email. They were like, I love what you guys do. I read it every day. I would just love for you to hire me as the official Skim grammarian. And we were like, we know grammar really well. I actually was like an English tutor. It's like, we intentionally are writing in a way that reads like your friend just jotted you a quick email. And that's definitely how we started. I think that the voice has evolved over time, but we sounded familiar. And I think, especially if you look at what was the media climate in that moment, it was not speaking to our audience. And then I think, let's talk about who is our audience. We reach the most important demographic to our economy. When we started the Skim, our pitch was like, this is going to become the most important demographic to our economy. Like, heads of every news network and media company, why are you not creating content for her in ways that fit her lifestyle? I'm really happy to say over a decade later, like, now she is actually the one in power. She actually is in the C-suite. She is in the boardroom. Like, we've watched the change over a decade, and we have a long way to go, especially as it comes to wage equity and other rights. But I think what we know is, like, this audience influences 95% of household purchasing decisions. Like, this audience controls how our economy works. And not reaching her by not talking to her in the way that resonates is a detriment. And I think what that meant back then means something really different today. What it meant back then was, sound like her friend, sound casual, sound conversational. We had so many people write in and be like, does my college roommate work for you secretly? But I think today it's actually treat and recognize the whole person that she is. She's not just thinking about when it's Christmas time, what will I buy for Christmas? And she's not just thinking about when it's tax season, I guess I have to do my taxes. She's not just thinking about planning a wedding or buying her first home when it is time to do those things. This is the same person doing a lot of things with a lot of stuff on her shoulders and a lot of burdens that she and she alone are carrying. And I think that understanding her has been the X factor of like how we've gotten to here.
You started this, I think you said you were both 26, around there.
Carly, would you like to correct the record?
Sorry, your audio, Danielle, your audio is bad.
Carly, would you like to correct? I was 25. Carly was 26. Just we want to be accurate.
So Danielle is the younger one. Now, yes. Let me ask you this, because we're sitting here, it's 2023. Obviously, from that point in your lives, I am sure a ton has changed and you've grown in, for most people, I think, between, let's say, 25 and 35 or 40, so much changes. How Were you able to, or was that part of the plan, or did you not change in terms of the content that you were producing? Did you grow with your audience, or did you keep it where it was focused on a younger demographic?
Both. So I think that the Daily Skim is still a phenomenal product for graduating college, entering the workforce. And I think it gives you an ability to get in touch with the world and stay in touch with the world, even if the motivating factor is that you're not in school and those aren't really things that, unless you seek them out, you have to be on top of. I think it quickly becomes a routine. And what we see is that people get hooked on it and hooked on the feeling, really continuing to get informed. And I think that leads to a lot of confidence. Or, and this is also very often the case, we're one source in a wide variety of what people consume. We also have grown up with our audience. So we have introduced new products that match to the, I would say, the things that keep us up at night. So whether it's what's going on with your finances, what's going on with your career, what's going on with caregiving, becoming a parent, thinking about your parents, all of those decisions are both emotional and financial. And they also lead to, and we see this unfortunately again and again, a significant burnout factor or actual illness for this audience. And we have really done our diligence on gathering the data, both quantitatively through insights, qualitatively, to build our products with that audience in mind. So I think you start off with the age that we were when we entered the real world, and then we grow up together. And I think that lends a lot of authenticity. I think the biggest thing that has changed is in 2012, we thought that it was the heyday of feeling overwhelmed by the amount of sources of information. That is a joke. I do think, though, that what has heavily, one of the things that has heavily gone in our favor is that it's even harder to find something that you trust. It's much easier to find a lot of things that you agree with, but very few places that you feel like they get you, or that you actually trust their information, even though you may not agree with it, that it's not just an echo chamber. We have people from all different parts of the country, from across the partisan divide. And that's something that's been really important to us since day one.
Yeah, it sounds like the credibility, you go back to 2012, it's incredible how much has changed in terms of where people get their information, what people are reading. I see it now, especially having two teenage daughters and just personally. But it seems like the fact that you were out there very early on when newsletters were, like, that was a new thing as well. But because of building that brand reputation, it actually has helped you as you've expanded, it sounds, into other areas. And people are like, oh, it's the Skims, because there's so much out there right now and there's so many sources of information and no one knows what is the truth, what is real. For both of you, and I guess Carly, you can answer first though, but would you say that in terms of what were your next steps, next products? So you had this newsletter. What were the next areas you went into and why?
From a platform perspective, I think we expanded pretty naturally in terms of having podcasts and video and social and expanding in the way that you would think about for a digital media company. But more importantly, in terms of the topics that we actually expanded into, I think gets to the heart of your question, which is really looking at what this audience was facing and what she was up against and how could we best serve her. It goes back to our mission. We make it easier to live smarter. I think how we've evolved is we do that so that you can make informed decisions. And we started, the first kind of initiative or expansion we did was with civic engagement. And we became one of the top ways to get millennial women out there to register and to vote. And to date, over 2 million of her have activated through the Skim with voting. just, I know this podcast is coming out in a few weeks, but we're talking to you just a day after interviewing Governor Haley about what's happening in Alabama, about what are the issues that are affecting this demographic, who is the most critical voting bloc there is. The next way that we expanded was actually moving into personal finance. I think it's no secret. We know all of the stats around where women fall behind in the wealth gap. And we know why. And we know why that's because products aren't catered to her. I think a really good example of understanding and knowing our audience is actually how we rolled out our financial product. We were going to launch our finance vertical with a paid subscription product. We were ready to go. We were going to have a really big launch in May of 2020. Don't need to tell you what happened in the spring of 2020. So we were like, let's postpone this little launch for July. Things will be much better by then. And in April of 2020, she started getting laid off and started filing for unemployment, which was confusing to do. We did a webinar in the middle of the day, like on a Wednesday. 10,000 of her signed up to join this webinar, how to file for unemployment. And we looked at each other. We were like, how can we launch a paid subscription financial product when she is coming in the thousands? And that's something we didn't even market to her to file for unemployment. Like that is showing that we don't get our audience. So we actually, it was the fastest pivot we've ever done as a business. We scrapped that plan and we launched finance as a vertical that went content first, free, and quickly became, you know, actually one of the largest parts of our business, where again, we're giving her the information she needs to make the important decisions in her life. Since then, I think we all know that, especially over these last few years, mental health has taken huge toll in this country, in particular on women, because of a lot of burdens that she and she alone bear. And we launched a vertical called Skim that focused on her health and well-being in general, with specific highlighting mental health and also fertility. That then expanded into parenting, which, as you mentioned earlier, our audience is growing up. She is starting to have families. And so how do we grow up with her as she makes those decisions? We also saw that, especially when COVID so much happened, with all of our purchasing decisions and behaviors. And we evolved from recommending, here's what I just binge watched on Amazon, and the next book I read and the next show I watched, to product recommendations in general that help her make decisions. And so all that is to say, like, every vertical that we are in is very well thought out into how does this fit the need of our consumer at this time and place in her life. And I think especially as we talk about how much has changed in the media landscape at large, our secret sauce has always been knowing our audience and knowing her, not just and instinctively and qualitatively, but also quantitatively. And really because of the first and zero party data that she's always shared with us so that we can best serve her.
Yeah. I want to just step back a little bit and go back to those early days. And obviously it sounded like when this thing took off, you both were like, wow, and it was viral, right? No paid media, you weren't doing anything behind it, which newsletters do. When was that? Was it a first deal for an advertiser? When did you start monetizing it? And when were you like, wow, this is, we have a real business here, so to speak?
There are a few different ways to answer that, I think. Yeah, I think that we knew something was there by the growth. At the same time, it was really hard to raise money. So that the adoption from our audience is what kept us going when the funding conversations were like hitting our head against a wall. Then we had a really great partnership with Homebrew Ventures, who led our seed round. When they came on board, we did hire a small but mighty team. And I think Homebrew really gave us some phenomenal advice. At that time, the best piece was, you got to pick one thing to focus on. So is it going to be audience or is it going to be revenue? And we said audience, like, we're already doing that. We didn't really know how to go about monetizing, but we knew that it was going to end up being based off of the strength of the relationship with our audience. So that's what kept going. And I think that it paid off that when we did start working with partners, we got to work with brands that were on our dream list. We worked with the NBA. We worked with Chase. We worked with Buick. We worked with marquee brands were not what people expected. And that was some of the best feeling, was to be able to come out and say, we're surprising and delighting, and here's how we're going to introduce a valuable monetization stream. I think from that too, I go back to that example a lot in my mind, because I think that level of focus is so needed when you're a founder. I also think that at that point, it was such a luxury to be like, oh, I'm just going to pick one. What's the one thing? And sometimes when it feels really hard in my head, I go back to that moment of being like, remember, we could only do one thing. What was that like? Where did we thrive and where did we fall? And I think going back in my head to those early days, that really that decision is more than anything what shaped us.
Nowadays, when we talk about today, and I'm sure a lot has changed in your lives, just like your readers, you've been at this for a relatively long time, right? And you started when you were very young. Has there been times that you've thought to yourself, maybe I should be doing something else now, or step away, or have you thought about that? Or is this still just such an emerging business and area that it allows you to do those things without having to step away?
First of all, are you telling us that we're not very young anymore?
No, you guys are compared to me, you definitely are very young. Danielle is a year younger. Oh,
sorry, Danielle's the youngest. We established that.
She's very young, but Carly, yes, is.
As your peer. I think there's two ways to answer that. We have not had the same job for over a decade. If we had, I'd be like, okay, next job. Like, we have had 150 jobs. The one of the most fun parts of like our role as a founder for this is actually been able to fire ourselves from the various jobs that we have had at every time. Like, the joy of being able to fire yourself from being like, I don't have to run sales, like firing ourselves from being like, we don't have to run finance because that wasn't a good idea. But being able to expand and bring on a team, obviously it just changes your role and what you can focus on. Danielle and I, when we're asked, what are your favorite things about running this? Like, we have pretty much the same answer. Like, we both are big thinkers. We understand this audience. We have a lot of thoughts and opinions around the future of consumer brands and how information and media, if you will, is where that's going. And we like to think big like that. We love the marketing and the branding part of doing that and building the business. And I think because of what we've done, we became businesswomen very quickly in launching this. I think we love the learning and being able to, when we have the ability to continue to learn and the ability to think big, like, that is where we are at our best. And I think what's been really interesting, we're talking to you now 4 years into the craziest time in our industry in particular, but for every industry, like, where we have a fantastic board and people we dreamed of having on our board. And when they say to us, guys, like, we've never had cycles like this. We've never seen it like this. I think we recognize that, like, being able to run a company in this environment and having weathered many storms through it has made us really strong leaders and has been the best like business school one could ever go through. So I feel like, I guess it's a long way of saying, I don't feel like we've had the same role. I think we've had 150 different roles. And we always say, if we left tomorrow and had to start something new, it would probably look very similar to the Skim. And I say that because we're just really passionate about serving this audience and this mission. And in that capacity, we've just gotten started.
Yeah. It just seems like you're 10 years in, but there's still a need in terms of what you're doing. And it's great to see also, as you mentioned, like, some of those brands, because it wasn't just beauty brands, or it was Chase. It was things that are really important in the full scope of life, which is great. And Danielle, I want to ask you, in terms of the business today, the Skim, in terms of all the things that you are doing, and not to look several years down the line, but where do you foresee this business started as a newsletter, where do you foresee the business growth and going as the months and let's say the next couple of years take us?
Yeah. So I think this business started as a relationship with a very valuable audience. And the way that showed up in a product was first through a newsletter. And then it became a media company. And then behind that, it became really a company with a treasure trove of zero and first party data on what women need to live smarter and healthier and happier and more fulfilled lives. And so we want to keep building that and making sure that they feel seen and heard and confident in making choices that match the pressures in their lives. And so as those pressures grow and change and evolve, we also will introduce products and insights and all of the various ways to not only reach our audience, but continue to reach those who reach her to make sure that they are being treated with the value that is really inherent in this huge part of the workforce.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you both, if you were to say what you're most proud of, because I'm an entrepreneur, I've interviewed lots of entrepreneurs. It's awesome when you create something that is meaningful for others, really meaningful and mission based, which it seems like this obviously was, because you saw that women were not getting that attention. It was all geared towards 45-year-old guys and you were in the business. But what would you each say you're most proud of over the last 10 years in building this business? And either one of you can start.
I have different buckets of answers, so I'm going to give you three answers.
I think, okay, we'll give you three.
There are different buckets. You can choose which one you like. I think from our perspective, like, I'm so proud of what we have done with civic engagement, and that will go down for me, like, personally, as one of the greatest legacies I personally could have.
And amazing. Being able to 2 million people
across the country. Yeah, and to be able to reach across party lines, I think, is especially in today's world. I think personally, I think our partnership, like, has defied all the odds. And I think we have been through lots together professionally and personally. And I think that it has only made us stronger. And I think it's a really special part of, like, our company and of what we've created. And I think the third thing is, I were talking to you amidst craziness happening in the world in every way, and in an environment that nobody's seen before. And so many of our peers have disappeared, and that's very upsetting. And I think I'm really proud of how we have built our company and how we have, especially in the last 4 years, navigated a lot of unknown waters and uncharted territory.
Those are three good buckets. And I will say, and I have to say, the partnership and having a partner for a couple of businesses I built, the same partner, it's so great when you can have someone that is honest, you can rely on, you just to help build, but it is also one of the most difficult things for people to find.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're waiting for Tinder to sponsor us, so maybe they will.
After they find out that's how you met.
Yeah, I know, they're going to stop.
I think we're going to get you a sponsorship with them. And Danielle, what would you say? And you can divide it into buckets or as well. Or
no, I think all of those things are true. I think the last thing is just, I'm really proud of some of the phenomenal talent that we have found and nurtured and that has brought up at this game. And some people have gone into leadership roles at the company, and others have gone on to do things that they always wanted to do, that they said they wanted to do when they were 22 and interviewed with us. And I think that is a mark of something. When I think about PayPal Mafia or Google early days, that is something we always talked about, and we still have relationships with a lot of those people, and it just makes me really proud.
Yeah, and I would bet, just from a standpoint, I'm sure you get emails, but just from now, from people who maybe started reading The Skim back 10 years ago and how it's helped them progress in their lives and their careers. And that must be an incredible feeling, I'm sure, to get some of those notes or for someone to stop you and tell you that, that I would imagine is or often happens to both of you, I think.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I don't think we ever take that for granted. And it, every time it happens, we're a little bit of, oh, wait, it was me. So that is the one I think it's almost like it's weird to be proud of because we're just, every time we get one, I'm like so floored by.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to thank you both for coming on Entrepreneurs, How Success Happens, and wishing you both continued success. It's really incredible what you've built. And just even knowing, as I said, not your demo, but going back and really to say The Skim, and I think you may have said it just from, you were talking about PayPal Mafia and Google, like The Skim in that period of time. And when it was like, everyone was reading it. Like, it was just like, I just remember hearing my friends who were in the office, you got to check this out. You got to check this out. That's pretty cool. So congrats
thank
on building
you
a
so
brand.
Much. Yeah. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank yeah. you
for having us.
You got it. We'll do an article too. Okay.
Take care.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. Or on Twitter at Robert Tuckman, that's RobertTuckman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuckman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.